U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global, so creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
And happy Friday, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, coming to you from the Allstate Skyline Studio on this mostly sunny now Friday afternoon. We don't have to worry about the temperature. Let's just take the sunshine one step at a time. In the studio right now is Andrea Haines from the Chicago Tribune, comes by from time to time most Fridays to talk about what's what. And I want to ask about the Facebook story, but first we should comment on the fact, or just mention the fact, that Uber, the great disruptor, is now a public company. The IPO went up today. It's been a little disappointing.
It has. It's been a little slow for them today. Maybe not the end of the world, because, you know, it's a tough day in the market generally, right?
Well, and it's one of those things where, you know, let's just kick our heels back and let the company develop and watch the stock. I think maybe it's certainly not better than had it taken off. I was sure they would have preferred that the stock took off today, but they're not going to go private tomorrow. They expect to be a public company for a long time to come.
Yep, I wouldn't write them off in a day. Let's see what happens.
Because we're too busy anyway breaking up Facebook, right? Chris Hughes, one of the founders of Facebook, had an op-ed this week, said it's time to break it up, baby.
That's exactly right. So it's interesting because he was in on the ground floor from the Harvard days, in on, you know, Mark Zuckerberg when they were but children, practically inventing this,
right,
this thing
really
that became Facebook.
They were children.
Yeah, it's amazing. You look at pictures of them and their little baby faces, and here they were inventing this company that has changed everything.
Okay, so what's his argument for breaking them? I mean, he talks about AT&T, right, and Standard Oil, the government broke them up. Why does Facebook fit into that group?
Yeah, so what he argues is that there's just too much power concentrated in Mark Zuckerberg's hands. It's not only in the company's hands, it's specifically in Zuckerberg's hands because of the way he holds the stock. And while he's, you know, he hedges around saying that Mark is a good and kind person, as in the cases that you mentioned, you know, there have been times when the government has seen fit to step in.
I think it's funny, I heard him on an interview yesterday, I guess, saying, yeah, I don't know if we'll still be considered friends. I think I'm his friend. I think he's a good guy. But even Zuckerberg says, he doesn't say break me up. He says regulate me, right? They have openly asked for government regulation.
Yeah, regulation would definitely be a piece of it. They have, you know, 70% of Americans are using this. Everybody's on Facebook. As we know, it's not just baby pictures. It's how presidents get elected. It's huge things. It's our privacy. There's calls from people like Elizabeth Warren and many, many, many others who think that there needs to be more regulation around privacy. Much of that would center around companies like Facebook.
But there is no other Facebook, right? There's no competition. And so when we do find out about some egregious behavior, you know, we're furious, and then we sort of forget about it and then go back to our status update.
Yeah, and some people will say that Facebook is something of a natural monopoly and that would make it hard to break up. But as you know, they've acquired other companies like WhatsApp, which is instant messaging, Instagram, you know, photos. So it's kind of like they own it all now, and they've been very aggressive about doing that. And right now, Facebook is aggressively trying to integrate those into kind of one thing, and that would make it even harder to break them up.
So if they were to break up Facebook, is that what they would do? They'd spin off Instagram and WhatsApp and things like that?
I think that's a possibility. And then again, adding in the regulation piece to just have better handle on this, as it's clear, like, Congress can't get out ahead of all this
well now. Right. So. And so you've got an entity that says we want to be regulated. What's holding Congress up? Just Congress? Congress being Congress?
Of course.
Yeah. All right. So we'll follow that. And I would say the chances of Facebook being broken up are nil.
Yeah.
What would we do? What would we do without it, Andrea?
I don't know. But, you know, companies have come and gone before. So we'll see.
Oh, not a company like Facebook. we'd be relegated to sitting in front of the fireplace in our flannel T-shirts or flannel shirts and whiling away the rest of our lives.
That doesn't sound so bad.
Which brings us to Land's End. You know, when I think of Land's End, that's what I think of, pretty much only flannel shirts. Now, they have an interesting word. They were purchased by Sears. Sears sold them off when Sears was, you know, spinning off everything to try to stay alive. And now Land's End and Sears are sort of officially parting ways.
Yes, they are having a conscious uncoupling, you might say, after years of kind of drama. And there's still drama there because part of the lawsuit against the current owner of Sears is that, you know, there's been some some dealings about how much Lands' End was valued for and all this when they spun it off. So we'll probably continue to hear about Lands' End in concert with Sears. But in terms of their stores, they are breaking up. And no, go ahead. Like, as you said, like, you think of Lands' End maybe with flannels and things like that, but they do have a lot of things that are good quality. They have great swimwear. They have women's workwear. They have men's, you know, shirts and things. They have a lot of repeat customers. I think it was actually a big draw for Sears.
So it's interesting to me that they were a catalog company that went into brick and mortar stores via Sears. Sears is going away. They still do a vast majority of their business on through catalogs and online, but now they're opening up stores on their own. Like there's one at Oak Brook Mall, right?
Exactly. Talk about a company, as you say, that's caught in that weird place where they were a catalog company before we were all shopping online. Then they're sort of in retail. They're in this place with Sears that's kind of weird, and they have some standalone stores, but they didn't quite catch the wave of like the true diehard online shopper. So they're in a little bit of a weird place, but I think it's a strong brand.
And now, well, yeah, that's the thing. I guess it is a brand, but even though they're opening their own stores, they've got their own catalog and website. They're also selling through Amazon and Walmart. So they're coupling with other retailers, online retailers in a way, giving up a little of their own control, but trying to, and they're doing pretty well, I think, with Amazon, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting to see companies like that try to do it all, because I think part of what you liked about a Lands' End, I'm not saying they were quite Nordstrom, but they had that really good customer service, I feel like.
Oh, that's true.
Over the years, right. You know, you felt like they were a trusted brand, you know, and so as they partner with others, we'll see what happens.
All right. And they're headquartered still in, it's Dodgeville, Wisconsin, right?
That's right.
Okay, so you say they've got nice swimwear as well, not just flannel shirts.
That they do. That's something that they're really strong on, is all that summer beach wear. So if it ever gets above 65 degrees around here, we'll need that.
Clearly, they've stopped sending me their catalogs.
Yeah, do they do that? They used to be one of those that you'd have to say, like, please for the
quit.
Love of God, stop sending me 8 catalogs a week. But I don't think I've gotten one in a while.
Andrea Haynes from the Chicago Tribune, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
You can find a lot of business stories at chicagotribune.com. We'll talk a little bit later in the program about graduates today, or maybe first graders today. What should they be learning through their education to prepare them for the fast-changing job picture ahead? It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. We're here on 720 WGN. All right. Graduation speeches are being rehearsed or maybe listened to even this weekend as college graduations are underway. The job market is red hot, and there are more open jobs than there are unemployed in this country, which means a lot of businesses are going wanting when it comes to hiring new talent, acquiring new workers. Tom Gimble is on the phone line. He's the CEO of LaSalle Network, and he's one of the guys who places workers with their companies. Welcome back, Big Tom.
Always good to be with you, sir.
All right, so what do you do if you're running a business, you need talent, and you can't find it?
You know, initially, it was if you can't find the experienced hires when unemployment drops, then you go to recent college graduates, you lower your bar, so to speak, on experience level, and then it drops to when unemployment drops even lower, you eliminate your education criteria and you take it down a level. So if you wanted MBAs, you take bachelor's degrees. If you need a bachelor's degrees, you go to associate's degrees. And now at 3.6% unemployment, you say, okay, how do we do more with less?
Right.
And so that's really the problem.
So you're not going to bring people in. You're going to have to do more with the people you've got.
Exactly. So there's really probably three options that you want to take. Number one is you've got to develop a training program. And if you already have one, you have to enhance it. And you've got to look at how are you giving your people the skills to grow and most importantly, to not leave. Right? So when you're already short on people, you want to make sure that you don't have an exodus. So you've got to continue to invest and train and develop those people.
You know,
the second thing,
yeah,
oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
The second thing is you want to encourage people internally to take on more challenging roles. You might have to promote people ahead of schedule and or cross-train them so they can learn to do more than one job within the organization.
So it seems to me that it used to be if you wanted to increase your salary, right, you bolted to another company. Is that still the case, or is there more leverage now to getting a pay raise by promising to stay within your company?
Yeah, you can always jump ship and make a few dollars more, but really a great opportunity is within your own company is to ask your bosses for the opportunity to do more, and in lieu, when you execute that, to sit across the table and say, now I want to be paid. And companies are looking at it and saying they don't have another choice, but even aside from whether the unemployment's at 3.6% or 6.6%, it's the right way to run a business. You want to give the people who've executed for you more opportunity.
How do you compare that, though, with the idea that you don't want to be so insulated with promoting from within that you sort of stagnate that way?
Well, in a perfect world, you're doing both. You're bringing in some external eyeballs for certain positions, but you're also hiring people who are earlier in their career, and you're giving them opportunities to grow. And it's funny, I was just on a panel with the founder and CEO of Spikeball, the game that you play in the backyard and parks and stuff.
Was it Reuter?
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
Chris?
Yeah, we kind of grew up in the same sort of turf. Yeah, Chris
okay.
has been on the show.
Yeah, and he's a Marquette guy.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy. And he was saying, you know, they've got 24 employees and a lot of 20 somethings. And you hire correctly and you give them autonomy and you'd be really surprised at what they can accomplish. And I thought it was a great lesson, great message.
You said something earlier about, you know, you lower your education requirement. If you needed an MBA before, you reduce that to just an undergrad degree. How important is an MBA? I mean, I have this theory or feeling sometimes that our level of education requirements are a little inflated for what we need to do the job.
Well, I believe they are at certain levels. It used to be 25 years ago, it was on the finance side of things and on the general management side of things, you went back and got an MBA to round out your experience from a business perspective. So if you were a marketing person, you had the financial expertise, educationally speaking, and vice versa. And now, when they become so much more commonplace and you can get them online and every single college has them, they've become a little bit more devalued. And the School of Hard Knocks is now you've got 25-year-old entrepreneurs that are creating $100 million, $1 billion companies. And I think it's lost a little bit of its shine. But the MBAs for the right roles are very important.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO of LaSalle Network. Follow him at LaSalleNetwork.com or Tom Gimbel. Thanks for coming by. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on Chicago's very own 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, it is graduation time. There was a study recently by Deloitte that said 43% of millennials plan on spending, 2 years in their job? 28% say probably not beyond five. Of course, those are the older workers, but we are moving around at a rapid pace these days. And it begs the question, really, what should people be learning in school? What should we be worried about our kids, our grandkids, what they're learning in school these days? And G. Riley Mills is here. Gary Mills is a member of the Forbes Coaches Council and a friend of mine, author of the book, The Bullseye Principle. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
The Forbes Coaches Council, what is that? I don't see you in your sweats or anything like that.
No, it's not that kind of coach. It's an invite-only organization. We're asked to submit articles on different topics that we are considered a thought leader.
Yeah, and you know, you and I, when you come in, we usually are talking about communication in one form or another. So I love reading what you're writing at Forbes.com. But tell me about this idea of students now. I mean, you know, it's all about STEM education, right? But should we be training kids in a different way?
Yeah, so this article, this most recent one I wrote for Forbes, came about. I was speaking at the University of Utrecht outside of Amsterdam. And afterward, this gentleman came up who was an expert. His name is Frank Evers. He has a company called Perfect Storm. And he's an expert in education to figuring out what do we need down the road? Where is education going? Getting us ready. So he's looking to the future. And I said, hey, man, this is perfect because I have a daughter going to college.
Right.
What should her major be to set her up for success? And he said something that shocked me a little bit. He said, well, here's the deal. Most of the jobs that your daughter are going to be working or other kids in school now haven't even been invented yet.
Which is amazing.
They're not invented yet. And there's a statistic in my article, 85% of jobs haven't been invented yet for 2030. So our kids in the year 2030 are going to be doing jobs that haven't even been invented yet.
But so what are we talking about? Are we talking about just a liberal arts education? I mean,
Yeah, so that's what I asked him. He said, I said, well, if it's not the major, then what can you recommend? And it began this series of conversations and interviews that I've been doing over the last few months with him, which was fascinating. And what it came down to are there four different things that we need to get our kids ready with, these skills and traits.
And they're more like life skills, really, than they are book skills.
Yeah, so one is communication, being able to advocate for your ideas, clearly articulate your concepts. The second is collaboration, being able to work with people of all different values and different backgrounds.
You and I talk about communication a lot. And so most young workers have a view of their own communicating skills that don't match what their bosses think.
Yeah, right? That's correct. Most young workers think, I'm great at communication. But if you ask their bosses say that's not the case. Same with collaboration.
So well, collaboration jumps out at me because, you know, when my kids are in high school or in college or out of college now, but I think, you know, all of these group projects, what a way. I hated doing group projects because I felt like it was not a good measure of my own abilities. So I didn't like it when my kids were doing it. But what they're really being taught is how to manage in the workplace once they get out.
Yeah, absolutely. Same with sports, right? Same with sports. Same with being in a band. Same with being in an orchestra, being in a dance troupe.
Yeah, but you're not graded in a band, right? And that's why I didn't like school group projects, because your grade could be brought down by some goof.
Yeah, that's true. But being able to work, if the younger generation are moving from job to job to job, that's different cultures, that's different type of work environments, different leadership styles. So they got to be able to be nimble and be able to go from company to company.
The other is creativity.
Yeah, creativity.
How do you teach creativity?
So, well, one of the things that is highly recommended is get them to learn a musical instrument. Take a drama class, learn how to be part of that, and just get their mind thinking in a different way, because brainstorming in the corporate environment, being able to come up with ideas, thinking out of the box, those are all qualities you need.
You're right that creativity correlates to adaptability.
Yeah.
Which is probably really what we're talking about. Because when I think of being creative, I'm like, well, I'm not going to sit down and write a poem or paint a picture.
No.
But creative is just a way to find something, find a different way to do the same thing.
Absolutely. Can you look at a new project, almost like a laboratory, and think of new ways to do it that we haven't thought about before? And that's one of the traits that companies are looking for. They're looking for creative thinkers who can come in there. One of the things about millennials is they're dying for feedback. They love feedback.
Right.
And in fact, they not only want feedback from their bosses, they want to give feedback to their bosses.
Do they want negative feedback?
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Give it to me. Tell me. Give me feedback because I'm going to give you feedback too. Right? You've been running this company the same way for 30 years. Guess what? I got some ideas how you can be better.
You sock me in the nose, I'm going to sock you right back.
Yeah, they love it. They're hungry for it. 65% of people in the corporate environment want more feedback.
And in my generation, I'm thinking we're just a little more reserved than that.
Yeah.
We don't want that.
No.
There's nothing worse, Gary, for me than when I have to go sit in Todd's office and do my annual review.
Everybody hates the annual review.
I put it off. And okay, so the fourth one is character.
Yeah, so character is the last one. Companies know they're not just about their product and services, but how do they have an effect on the world? Younger workers, that's a really important thing. What are you doing to better the world, the environment, your fellow citizens? And so that's something that companies have to take into account.
But here's the thing. The things we've just gone through, the last four, if you're a school administrator, maybe with the difference of collaboration, we've talked about that, but how do you these aren't classroom subjects very often, especially character.
Yeah, so character for sure is, you know, teaching kids opportunities to go pick up trash on the side of the road, helping, you know, collect storybooks for a charity, anything, feed my starving children.
It's kind of funny though, because the way we measure our success now in schools with standardized testing, these are not standardized testing questions.
No, and that's a whole other conversation of what a standardized test is missing in the big picture.
And you know the big picture, because one of the co-founders of Pinnacle Performance Company as well, where you take, as it started by you taking your acting skills and training.
I started the company with David Lewis, and our backgrounds were as professional actors, but also as people who knew business. And we just combined these skills to teach people how to be more engaging, more confident, more persuasive with their communication.
A Minnesota boy is raising his family in Chicago, but you're barely here.
I know, a lot of traveling.
You're not eating the walleye cheeks, you're traveling overseas.
Walleye cheeks. I've eaten walleye cheeks.
But a lot of overseas work. You're enjoying it? Yeah.
Yes, we're in 50 countries, so we train all around the world. So I am very lucky to be able to travel around and get to work with executives all over.
G. Riley Mills, where do people find out more about the Bullseye Principle or anything else?
You can go to pinper.com, P-I-N-P-E-R.com. That's the Pinnacle Performance website.
Thanks for squeezing me in.
Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. We've talked about it plenty on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we will surely be talking about it later, but since we're in the beginning stages of the James Tyree Emerging Business Leadership Award, thought we should keep you up to date. This week, 12 semifinalists were narrowed down to 6, and those 6 are Apple Dental Care, Back of the Yard Coffee, Infinitech, Mission Propel, Reconstruction Technology Partners, and T-Squares. The point of this award is to shine a spotlight on businesses with high potential in the city and learn about industries that we may not have even known existed before. The final selection is on June 6th, but tune into the Wintrust Business Lunch in the coming weeks to hear from them firsthand. But one emerging business that's facing their next challenge is the California-based Bird, which makes those electric scooters. Back in March, Bird laid off 5% of its workforce, which has about 700 employees. And this just happens to be one of the companies that's bringing their scooters to Chicago later this year. Let's hope that we were patient enough through the e-scooter craze, and that at the very least, we won't be stepping over scooters like in San Francisco. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust. All right, you know, the state legislature is considering legalization of marijuana. It's a priority for Governor Pritzker, and it's moving along through the legislature. They think it could bring in maybe $500 million a year in tax revenue. John Pletz from Crane Chicago Business has done a deep dive into it. It's not published yet, but will be soon on the website, and he joins us now. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good to have you here. Tell me, so where is the bill right now in the legislature? Is it out of committee or still in committee?
I believe it's still in committee.
Okay, so can you tell me about the revenue projections and where the money's going to go?
Well, they're going to carve it up. Roughly 45% will go to the general fund and a budget stabilization fund, but more than half of it's going to go to several other programs. About a quarter of it's going to go to a grant program that's designed to help low-income communities, and particularly in communities that have really sort of been, hurt by both violence as well as sort of, the war on drugs and the broader drug problem. And then you're also going to have 20% or so go to mental health and addiction treatment.
And are those carve-outs, are those done in a way because those areas need help? Obviously they do. Or because those are ways to get votes to get the final package passed through?
Well, I think you'll probably end up seeing both effects, but the social justice and equity piece of that, in my understanding, has been a part of this bill since they started working on it over 2 years ago, and it's pretty common around the country with several of the other bills in other states that have legalized that is very much a part of that discussion.
We're talking to John Pletz. He's checking in from the Crane's newsroom here on the Wintrust Business Lunch about the piece he's about to publish on the marijuana bill. Okay, so John, the projections are what? $440 million to $676 million in annual taxes. Is your reporting showing that that's a fairly accurate prediction?
The $500 million plus is probably a pretty good place to start. If you look at the revenue that's been brought in states like Washington or Nevada, which are much smaller than Illinois, so I think that's probably a pretty good place to start. The question is ultimately what you do with it.
Right, and is this going to be a May 31st vote, or do you expect this to be wrapped up before the end of the session?
It's really hard to tell because there are so many other significant pieces of legislation that are moving through the General Assembly this year. You know, you could have one of those scenarios where everything comes down to the wire, or some things could get picked off early. It's a little hard to tell.
I mean, if Pritzker gets everything he wants, this would be a pretty massive opening session for him. We're talking about legalized gambling, legalizing marijuana, perhaps a graduated income tax. There is a lot on the legislature's agenda this week.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if all of that gets done, that may be one of the most significant legislative sessions in decades in terms of just the amount of really big structural things that are getting passed. I mean, you got to remember that in recent memory, went through a couple of sessions where, it was a struggle just to get a budget passed.
A couple of sessions where they didn't even get the budget passed. John Pletz checking in from the Crane's newsroom.
Yeah, exactly.
John, thanks very much. It was great to talk to you.
Glad to do it. Thanks, Steve.